It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Ernest Hancock, I tell you, another unafeared individual, Karen Kwiatkowski, retired colonel from the Air Force, sitting there at the Pentagon watching this stuff happen and was compelled. Yeah, that's one thing, Karen. I want to ask you, you know, what was the, why you and not any one of thousands of other people, or hundreds at least, or a couple of dozen, that, you know, knew what was going on? We were being marched into war where people were going to die. Things were going to get broke and blown up. And people were going to die on both sides of this. And how many people took the position that you did?
Okay, yeah, that I've given that some thought. You know, my compadres, my peers in this time frame were, you know, military officers for the most part, some senior civilians, some retired military officers. And a number of them were actually, if you can believe this, actually angrier than I was about what was being done. In the name of policy, in the name of propaganda, they were angrier than I was, okay? But they didn't take the steps that I did, and many of them could have. But there's a couple of things that made me different, and it's nothing special about me. I think part of it is, and this is an American problem, okay, maybe a global problem, but these men, and it was men that I worked with who noticed it and were upset about it, they also left, I retired, other people moved on, but they accelerated their departure. They found new jobs, new places to work where they wouldn't have to see this in their face every day. They wouldn't have to feel anger and guilt about what they're seeing. And this is because those men, and I'm saying it as a man-woman thing in a sense, these men had mortgages, they had wives and kids that were very dependent on them. Now, I was the sole breadwinner in my family also. I mean, I have four children and a husband, and I was their income. But I think women, oftentimes, our identities are not 100% in the place that we work. I think oftentimes we have maybe slightly more holistic view of who we are, and it relates to family, it relates to, you know, things that maybe are a little less monetary oriented.
Wow, you mean men and women really are different?
Yeah, well, they're way different. That's true.
I just turned 50. I've been married 26 years, and somebody tries to tell me that there's no difference between men and women. I'm like, I don't know what. No, there is definitely a difference.
There's lots of differences in how, yeah, absolutely, and how we approach things and what we value and how our identities are embraced. And for women that have families, and I think this is not a radical thing that I'm saying, you know, they look at it as a broader thing, not just themselves. My husband, who listened to me complain, you know, pretty much every day about what I was seeing going on, you know, he was totally supportive. I am pretty sure that most of the men that complained to their wives they had about what was going on at work, their wives tuned them out. I don't think that they, and if that's it, they even complained to their wives, because a lot of times men have this false idea that they should be stoic about things. So my husband, you know, he didn't get the details, but he kind of definitely understood that we were marching to war without any factual or legal justification, and that was being done consciously. So he understood why I was mad, and he supported that. So anyway, I think I could make different choices. I could take slightly more risks with my career because it wasn't quite as important to me, maybe, as it was for
Well, he understood the risk, though. I mean, he understood that you were...
Yeah, but you know what? He's a man. Worst case scenario, he'll go out, he'll support the family. Just because he wasn't doing it then didn't mean he could. He couldn't, you see. So there's a different view that women and men have, I think. So there's that. The other thing was, I grew up as a Goldwater Republican, a Ronald Reagan, I guess, Republican in some respects. Now, Reagan, of course, grew government, right? That's contrary to what he said he was going to do. He had some great rhetoric, and I loved his rhetoric. But in fact, the actual fact, he didn't succeed in shrinking government. He increased the debt, and he increased the size and scope of government. So that was something that kind of opened my eyes a little bit to there might be a difference between what politicians say and what actually happens due to forces possibly even beyond individuals' control. This speaks to what you were talking about earlier, about who's really running stuff. You know, who are the guys in the basement? I mean, you know, I didn't know what was going on, really, but I could see there was a disconnect. And then the Cold War ended. Half of my military career was Cold War time frame. And I didn't question a lot of things, and I don't think a lot of people in the military did during the Cold War. You know, we thought we had a pretty straightforward mission. But when the Cold War ended, not with a war, but with an internal collapse of the Soviet Union, a peaceful collapse of the Soviet Union, when that happened, my full expectation of things was that NATO, for example, would devolve. It would disband, because the reason NATO has stood up was because of the Warsaw Pact. The Warsaw Pact disbanded, therefore NATO should disband. And what did NATO do?
Invade Libya.
Yeah, well, they first off, they increased their budget, you know, and they made new reasons to justify their institutional existence. And then, of course, they found new wars to get involved in, the Balkans and whatnot. So... And that didn't make any sense to me. And, of course, by this time I had discovered Lou Rockwell. I realized I was a libertarian. I didn't change. I was a libertarian all my life. But I found out, you know, the Republicans really aren't libertarian, and they don't believe in some of the same things. And certainly they're not bound by the Constitution any more than Democrats were. So I had a philosophical framework that I think allowed me to criticize from within the system and to feel that I was right. Now, that doesn't mean I'm right, but if I believed I was, if I believed I had the philosophical underpinning, then I think that gave me the kind of the impetus to go forward, and that's the difference. But I'm going to tell you, I hear from lots, even to this day. I write an article for Lou Rockwell, I get email. I get a lot of it from folks inside the Pentagon, folks wearing uniforms, retired guys who work as civil servants to the Pentagon. They're reading this stuff. Their framework is a shared framework to what I had. So we have lots of potential to change the system. But anyway, I think that's what made me different. I was intellectually open to the idea that government might lie, you know, because there are a lot of people, even to this day, even though they say they think Obama will lie, they won't admit that Bush lied or Clinton lied or any of the previous ones lied. They think, oh, just the one I don't like lies. But, you know, I was kind of open to the idea that government by its very nature is, you know, deceptive, power-hungry, brutal, and, you know, as a libertarian, I would say evil.
So all the more reason why Karen wants to seek the power and run for Congress. You know, yeah, we're going to...
You set me up, man.
Oh, you walked right into that one.
Yeah, you know? I sure did.
So what we're going to do when we come back after this next break, you know, I've been involved in politics since 90 and run for Congress, God, 3 times, U.S. Senate against McCain once, Secretary of State twice, legislature. Oh, yeah, in 2004, me and McCain, man, we were having some fun. So this is, I've used this as a bully pulpit and a free soapbox to be all kinds of a butthead. But I'm telling you, never was it my intention to give a rip about how many votes I got. Even though we were very successful, largest third-party vote count up till David Nolan. David Nolan, founder of the Libertarian Party, was the only one that was able to beat my federal record. So,
oh, wow.
So I'm going cool. You know, I give it up to that. I have to run again. So what happens is that now we have Karen seeing the opportunity to run for Congress. Maybe. We'll see what happens. We'll talk about it when we come back. As a voice. You know, and just listening to her over the past hour of what she knows, I'd love for them to challenge her on foreign policy. I would love for them to challenge her on economics. I would love for them to challenge her on the budget. I would love for them. Oh, you see how much fun we can have? Oh, we'll talk about more when we come back here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and Karen Kwiatkowski. Just a little bit.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Oh, it's breakfast time in America. Yeah, it's the sun's rising. We got Karen Kwiatkowski on. She's going to free us. Well, I tell you, you know, there's a lot of questions that I'm sure are going to come up. I want to give you just some of the headlines here that I can see from the bio. And but you know, imagine this. Mm-hmm. In the Pentagon on September 11, 2001, Karen Kwiatkowski has decided not to watch from the sidelines. She has reported what she saw firsthand and continued a column in LouRockwell.com to advocate for liberty and rational government. Now Karen is stepping into the electoral arena to earn your support to send her to Congress in 2012. She anticipates a formal announcement after the redistricting process is complete in Virginia?
Yeah, we're getting new districts.
Okay, now this is what's happening. So you're from Virginia. I couldn't remember if it was West Virginia or Virginia. Okay, Virginia.
Yeah.
Now, this is, you have a PhD in world politics, okay? You got a master's in government from Harvard, all right? We have, you retired as a lieutenant colonel from the Air Force. You worked in the Pentagon. You're in the middle of, and let me tell you, the first things that are going to come up, 9/11, when you walked out, was there a jet airliner laying there that hit the Pentagon?
What, are you asking me?
Yeah. You're going to get asked that question.
Well, you're going to get asked that question. I know. Yep. Well, of course not. There wasn't one, and that's a fact. So I saw it. I saw the absence of it, I guess you could say.
Guaranteed they are going to do their best to shut you up.
I think if it's successful, if we have a successful campaign, if we go forward, absolutely, it'll raise up all of the awful things that the neocons said about me back when I first started, you know, kind of blowing the whistle a little bit. And, you know, and the neocons, the interventionist, global interventionist, you know, war empire movement is still strong in D.C. I mean, they're still present. All the same guys are there. They're not out of power in any way. You know, they're still there. Yep.
So, you know, this is, you know, so your answer is that I didn't see a jet airliner, man.
Sure didn't. And I happened to walk around and I was staring right at the place where it would have been and it wasn't there. You know, wow, hard to believe. I certainly can't explain that, but you know, I can tell you the truth.
And you know, there's, so that's going to come up. Then of course, you love terrorists and hate America because,
well, of course, yeah,
you were, you know, telling the truth about what real intelligence was going on and things that passed through your fingers that you knew were lies that go up, don't say and do. And they did it anyway. So you're going, wow, you know, I mean, how bad does this have to get? You know, so now we're looking into the future and you're after the Ron Paul effort in 2008 and whatever may happen again going into 2012. They're trying to get the band back together. You know, we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
And this is I remember earlier you were saying, yeah, you know, George Bush said, yeah, the Constitution is just a GD piece of paper. OK,
well, he said it. He did say that.
And
yeah.
No. I know he did.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of like, you know, of the opinion, okay, you know, you may get your wish and everybody think the same thing and they are no longer bound by some kind of social contract you say that I was forced into that I get no recourse in, really, and it doesn't bind you, but it binds me and allowing you to rip me off. And, you know, you're right. It doesn't count anymore. Screw you and the horse you rode in on. And I don't respect your authority. Now, when they want their authority respected, they'll go screaming Constitution all they want. If it's in their way, then it doesn't mean anything. And I'm saying that document is the only thing that justifies your existence. You don't support this and violations of the Bill of Rights, you know, one after another, every day, all day. I'm going, you know what? You're right, man. It doesn't count. Now what?
Yeah, that's right. Well, that's how all dictatorships and empires fail. You know, the people stop believing and they stop obeying. It's really that simple. you know, and we could be approaching that. I don't know, this is a little bit unrelated, but, you know, the head of Walmart, I guess, the CEO of Walmart, was on Drudge Report, had an article on Drudge Report just today saying he is projecting massive increases in food inflation to be experienced in his own stores. Well, you know, his stores feed America. So, you know, he's saying, hey, massive inflation. And this is the kind of thing that angers people and causes them to say, hey, we need to rethink this. What's wrong with our, you know, our leadership? And already, I don't know if you noticed this or not, I just noticed it recently, but, you know, the polling, Rasmussen, the polling organization that runs all kinds of polls?
Yeah, no, I'm familiar with it.
Yeah, Rasmussen polls. Well, they actually have been running polls for the last year, last 12 months or maybe more, identifying the people versus the political class. They actually have identified a political class. This is the Washington, you know, suits, the policymakers, the lobbyists and whatnot. They call them a political class, and they say, what does the political class think, and what do the people think? And, you know, you can imagine there's a big difference between those two things.
Absolutely.
So, you know, if we don't obey them, if we don't have a lawful government structure such that the Constitution had laid out for us and envisions, if we don't have that, trust me, we definitely outnumber the political class, and they are their days will be numbered if chaos breaks out. It really, should be very frightened.
This segues me into what I want to talk about, okay? Now, we have Tunisia kind of sparked this whole thing when you have people, they just couldn't feed themselves.
That's
represented by one guy lighting himself on fire because they wouldn't give him a permit to have a job kind of thing.
Right, and the political class in that country physically slapped him in the face after they, you know, after they told him to stop, you know, go starve to death. And, oh, by the way, here's a slap in the face, you know, and that's what set him off.
I can, and to think that that's not coming here is to be naive.
I think
that they are experiencing is coming here. Now,
it's coming here. Just because it didn't start here, you know, we Americans are fantastically wealthy compared to much of the rest of the world. We don't spend, you know, a lot of our income on food, but we will be. We will be.
Well, they went,
and people are going to be angry.
Well, what kind of increases? I mean, just in the last year, I mean, if you're living on a few dollars a day in Tunisia, you know, if that, all of a sudden wheat went up 100-something%, corn almost 100%, cotton.
Right.
But,
and rice you know, went up too.
So,
yeah,
so you're sitting there going, you know, I'd be hungry, bow, 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 okay?
That's right.
So what other recourse do they have? And they do they really understand what it is that they're, you know, Sierra sent you a package. I don't know if you had a chance to look at it today. I wanted to make sure you got this. I forgot to tell you about it.
Oh, okay.
We have translated Freedom's Phoenix into Arabic. We translated bunch of the graphics that we have. We have 39 languages it's in. We have the graphics like We Know the Truth, the bandit guy throwing the bouquet of flowers in Arabic. We have Arabic Facebook, Twitter. We got International Society of Individual Liberty to finish the translation of the philosophy of liberty into Arabic. They didn't have that done. We had Cato even sent us some Arabic English translation of the Declaration of Independence. So we have flooded the bloggers and all of the Facebook and Twitter guys and everything. We had a 30% increase in traffic on Freedom's Phoenix from Arabia. And I'm going, what happens when 30% of the population's under 15 and they realize that they own themselves and they don't have to be ruled by another pharaoh, even from Washington?
You got it.
Oh, it's all over. We're going to talk about it more. Come back with Karen Kwiatkowski. We'll be right back.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Yeah, Karen Kwiatkowski on Declare Your Independence. She's still the one. Still the one. You know, the one that I'm thinking of when it comes down to who took their
chest and stuck it up and said, you know, I do not respect your authority. And that's who I want running for Congress. You know, that already has a track record in the Pentagon, no less. The Pentagon. I tell you what it was. You know, the hubris and the arrogance of these people. There is no way they suspect, because they knew this stuff was leaking out. They did not suspect a woman doing it. You know, they had some kind of insulation for you.
Yeah. They didn't. They didn't expect it. And you know, that's the hubris and the arrogance of the neocons. And again, it's a lot of the same guys in power. Some different faces, but the philosophy's out there. But one of the great weaknesses of that political movement, even though they've created, you know, it caused a few wars, and you know, they do have a heavy influence in American foreign policy. But because they are arrogant, and because they do discount the power of the truth, they discount the power of individual people, they're a little bit anti-women, I would say, in some ways. They talk about education of Afghans, you know, well, we got to get the women educated, but their actions, of course, are to murder their children. So it's not, you know, they have some inherent weaknesses. I don't fear the neocons. I mean, I relish going after them, because in some ways they're not a formidable foe.
I realized this decades ago, you know, when I first started. I understood, you know, how to view these people. And I give you this, and you'll understand my point. Mm-hmm. Dealing with people like this is like playing chess with a 3-year-old. Okay, it's easy to beat them. You know, it's easy to slap them around. You have some fun with them, and they don't really understand the game. And but sooner or later, they stand up on the chair, they knock all the pieces on the floor, pull out their .45, and pump 3 in your chest. Okay.
Well, actually, yeah, you got a point. You know, you got a point there.
So it's easy to play, but they get to a point to where they're so frustrated that that's how they react. So, and that's, you know, pretty much how they've been reacting. So what I wanted to talk about now is, as being someone that was, you know, watching carefully Africa, sub-Saharan Africa, the Middle East, you know, you were one of, if not the only person I know at such a high level to have this kind of perspective. You had to have some kind of data coming across your desk that suggests the average age of these countries, that there was a demographic wave of youth that was coming that was going to sweep away all the contacts and the infrastructure of diplomatic and banking and financial interest and corporations and nationalized of the blah, 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 that we have been dealing with for decades, that when you got a enormously more than half of the population under 30 or something, you got to go, that's got to be a game changer.
Yeah. Well, you know, the CIA has for a long time, you know, watched and reported and worried about the demographics of particularly North Africa and the Middle East, and the impact that those demographics would have, the young people, masses of young people, and doing what young people do best, which is question and demand, you know, change, this kind of thing. This is kind of what they do naturally. And this would cause a problem for our handpicked dictators in all those countries, which, of course, you know, Mubarak and Ben Ali in Tunisia, and the guy in Yemen is our guy. Bahrain, of course, the royal family, we support them. Saudi royal family, we've picked handpicked leaders in Iraq and Afghanistan. You know, so, and these are all old men. There's no young people there. So the leadership, anyway. And yeah, it's something that they worry about. And I think, from my perspective, it is something that you can say, well, there's cause for hope. Change will happen. And the question is, will it be, how bloody will it be, I guess is the question. Will it be war, or will it be a peaceful, you know, evolution into a different way of government? And this is why I think what you're doing, and other organizations as well, you know, educating about liberty, educating about real free markets, real capitalism, not Michael Moore capitalism. You know, Michael Moore has a real good criticism of capitalism, but what I think he's criticizing is corporatism, not capitalism.
Yeah, this crony capitalism thing.
That's right, yeah. And that is what we have here in this country, and that's even a worse extent. They have it in our puppet states around the, you know, around the world. So this is a valid criticism. And if the young people self-educate and have access to a better understanding of how societies can be organized, how they can be self-organized, how freedom really works, that can help reduce bloodshed. I mean, that can be something that causes the change to happen in a way that is may not be good for the United States Empire, but it is very good for, you know, the region and the rest of the world that would like to trade.
Heck, the United States Empire ain't good for the United States.
No, it's not. I mean, you know, and this is what's so exciting here at home. If you forget about all the stuff we're doing around the world, you know, we're going broke at home. And part of why we're going broke is because we have this empire that is bleeding us and neocons that keep wanting it to get bigger and bleed us more. And certainly some Americans are enriching themselves. The military-industrial complex is enriching itself. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, the country's being bled. And when an average guy, especially like the Walmart CEO says, in 4 months you're going to see serious, not 4%, 5% a month, but serious, even much more than that, inflation in food prices, you know, we're going to say, wait a minute, can we, you know, are we going to, like, buy bombs or are we going to buy butter? Because they're going to be very upset. And this is part of the way that change can happen.
Well,
and
tell you,
we might be able to shrink the empire just out of our own, you know, people.
Oh, it's going
to
financially just collapse anyway. This one thing Dr. Paul is going on. He's going, like, look, hey,
yeah,
man, you know, it's going to happen regardless, one way or another.
It is. And really,
I tell you, when I grow up, I want to be like Karen, okay? So this is what I did. We moved up in North Phoenix on a little 2-acre thing. It's Freedom's Phoenix Farm.
Oh, yeah.
We have
cool.
We just got 3 goats. We have 20 chickens. We got,
excellent,
you know, we're getting ready to put in a cow. We're going to be here at least a year that mm-hmm. we're going to, I'm going to try and be mobile and ready to go anywhere after a year, but we're going to use this opportunity to learn. We planted a lot. And I got my own little square out there that we're going to be growing cigar tobacco just because I can.
Beautiful. Like, that's fantastic.
Freedom's Phoenix Cigars, you know. They go, did you add, don't you have to get permission to? I said, I don't know. I'm not asking.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, oh, that's fantastic. And really, I think a lot of people, not enough, but a lot of people are waking up to they're asking the fundamental questions. What am I going to do when the financial system in the United States collapses or gets out of control such that I don't have food and I don't have what I need for my family? And they're thinking about networking. They're thinking about getting prepared like you're doing, like I'm doing. You know, I mean, I'm out here doing much the same thing. And
oh, you're on the farm.
That's right. And, you know, I have to tell you, I grew up on a farm, so I had a little bit of a tiny, tiny background from when I was a kid, and I learned something new every day. And it's this whole body of knowledge of kind of traditional things and food work, repairs, all the things. There's a lot of stuff you have to know and need to know and a lot of networks that you have to develop. And it's important stuff. And the folks that are doing it early are going to save the rest of the people. You know, I mean, obviously we may not want to save them, but we'll have to.
Well, we're working on it, and they'll want to keep being fed regardless of whether you want to feed them or not. But
well, that's right.
What we've done, there's a thing called libertytrade.net. It's kind of a combination of eBay and Craigslist, but you get to determine what currency that you'll accept for the product or what it costs in various different, you know, like ounces of silver, grams of gold, Federal Reserve notes. So we've already done that. We've done these pre-1965 dimes, quarters, and half dollars to where, you know, onceuponadime.com. And on Freedom's Phoenix, we have walletvoting.com, a special edition that is all about these guys. We started this at our Freedom Summit. We came up with the idea. And all of a sudden, it exploded across the country already. People are starting to trade these laminated cards that kind of promote whatever, but different businesses and so on, but they got laminated dimes in them, these old dimes.
Yeah, so, isn't that something?
And they're like $270, $280 a piece now. They used to be a dime. You want to know what inflation is? Just look at a dime.
That's exactly right. Fantastic. That's a great thing.
We're working at it. We're working at it. Karen's going to help us. And she's going to be doing the Congress thing and saying stuff they don't want her to say. We'll talk about what she might say when we come back in just a little bit.
There are those that just want to be left alone and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
It's a
me, Ernest Hancock, each and every day on LRN.FM network from beautiful Phoenix, Arizona, from Freedom's Phoenix Farm. Well, we've grown up, and we're just like Karen Kwiatkowski. We got animals. Yay. You know, I've always been jealous of that. You know, I see your farm, I'm like, no, I want one. So
I know. Yeah, so, we're really lucky, timing and everything else, but it's good.
Well, does it take that much time out of your husband and yours day?
Yeah. And the other thing, and you'll find this out, everybody who has any property, even if it's a half acre, there's always work to do and chores and things to fix. And it's almost like your to-do list is like all the unfinished business from, you know, and everything you fix, two more things break. So, yeah.
Well, does it sustain you? I mean, are you getting to the point to where you feel comfortable when Walmart starts going up 200% on their food over a couple
of
months?
I think we've been doing this for a couple, 3 years now, and it can sustain us. I know in terms of meat, I don't really buy meat anymore. I don't have to. We have it here. Now what I still need is I need an alternative electrical source, and my greenhouse, I'm building a greenhouse just out of junk. I mean, just out of, you know, excess stuff, but that's happening this summer. It was supposed to happen last summer, but, you know, things take a longer time and we're doing it ourselves, but I'm going to have a small greenhouse, not a big one, just like a one family type greenhouse. And once that happens, you know, I already can and freeze and process and dry. I do that kind of thing for food. So, yeah, it doesn't sustain us now, but I'm a lot more comfortable. But if I had to do it on a slightly larger scale, I could easily do that.
Saturday at the Breakfast Club, and then a couple of weeks we had them on the radio for 2 hours, they took their backyard empty pool of a home in Mesa, and they just filled in the water at the deep end. And they put the tilapia, whatever that fish is there.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
And then
cool.
They put on top chicken wire above them and let the chickens poop into it. Then they have the pumps that go up through all their vegetables, kind of a hydroponic thing. And they have this enclosed,
goodness.
And then they got a greenhouse over the pool. And they
Oh my gosh.
So it's just they produce fish, chicken, eggs, vegetables, all in the size of one swimming pool.
That is amazing. And oh, yeah. Well, you know,
it's gardenpool.com. It's called
gardenpool.com. Excellent. You know, we don't have to do it the way
.org. Gardenpool.org.
Okay. We don't have to do it the way Grandpa and Grandma did it. You know, we have modern technology. We have the internet. We want to find out how to do something. We type in a question, and we come up with 6 or 7 different ways to get something done. And we really are blessed in that way. So a lot of people can do a lot of things in this country. Oh, I wanted to throw out this little bit of statistic that I found out. We have a guy here in the Valley, actually in the 6th District of Virginia, Joel Salatin. And he does natural beef, chicken, and he's got the system of doing it. And he's written books. He speaks out about localism and things like that. But anyway...
Oh, we just had a piece on the site with him. Yeah, he's the guy that has the chicken farm, the chickenness of the chicken kind of guy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right, okay.
And
I was talking about him yesterday.
Oh, and he gave a speech just in January to some group, and it was on the internet, and he pointed out that in the United States of America, in our territory proper, there are 77 million acres of lawn. So you know, we have the potential to be to weather the storm, I guess you could say, to weather the storm, and it's coming.
You know,
it's already here.
This is a good point I want to share with you. When we were what got me motivated to move up here and start doing this and take it seriously to get small. We're combining the workshop and our home. We're going to be ready to go mobile in a year. We'll be able to go anywhere in the world. I tell you what triggered it. When they did the S-510, that we control the food and what you can grow and how you can sell it and do all
goodness.
That. And I go, food? Yep. Seriously, food? They're going to do it because I knew that's exactly what would happen. Mm-hmm. Of course, people can grow a lot of, you know, heck, I had a little, you know, 16 by 20 garden, and we had more vegetables than we know what to do with.
That's right. Huge potential, yep.
And they want to stop, and then they go after vitamins. Mm-hmm. These are evil people.
Yeah, it is actually evil. There's no other way around it. And it is part, now this is where it's fair to say that's part of a global type agenda. It's part of a kind of a UN combination of a lot of the political class from a lot of different countries This is an agenda that they, with their corporate backers, are pushing. You know,
yeah, they want everybody to starve evenly.
That's right, and they want to be able to charge whatever they can charge for their materials and food products and seeds that they're selling, and vitamins and whatnot. So, and really, what it is in a happy way to look at this is that the controllers are really getting nervous about the control. That's all of us.
Good.
Yeah, they're getting really nervous, and they think
and they 5-10.
They think these laws and these regulations at some point are really going to be obeyed, because quite frankly, if the Congress had the idiocy to pass 510 and try to enforce it, and if the FDA starts trying to enforce their vitamin regime or whatever it is they're doing, if they're trying to, people are going to work around it in very aggressive manners, and pretty soon people are going to look at each other, and instead of being, oh, it's every other, you know, every 10th or every 15th or every 20th person is a libertarian, it'll be every other person is a libertarian, because
they
don't obey the government. They don't take the nanny state to heart.
You know, I use it as an example. I go, if you're one of these young people in Cairo, what do you think? All of a sudden, Mubarak and the regime would just pass a new law there. You know, you can't. You know, or yeah, we fixed it, or we pinky swear, or promise
that
we're going to...
Yeah, pinky swear, I like that.
You know, pinky swear. Yeah, a lot of people don't know what I mean when I say that. What the heck is a pinky swear? But the... I'm looking at not just the Middle East, because this is going to expand worldwide. And maybe Africa may be insulated simply because we're not screwing with them as much.
Yeah.
You know, they'll just have to fend for themselves, and the Chinese will take advantage. And what are we going to do, have an aircraft carrier go over? And I'm just, it's so stupid.
And it is stupid. It's incredibly stupid. And it's a waste of money, which in part I think, you know, Congress in particular is supposed to be holding the purse strings. And so That's where Ron Paul's in there.
You're campaigning for Congress. You know, should you decide to run and you go through this, what would be your main thing? When I get in there, my first legislation and pushing forward and doing slapping upside the head is what?
Well, that's a good question. I am not sure what the first thing is, but I can tell you if I make it in there and I have the 6th district is my my position, I would be junior. I would be an alien in Congress, except for the few Ron Paulians that are there. And I will simply hold up my Constitution, and I will read the bills. And I will read the bill first, and then I'll glance over the Constitution, see if that's constitutional. If it's not, I'm voting against it. And that's just that simple. And if I'm in doubt, I'm going to call Ron Paul and say, Ron, what are you doing? And he's going to tell me, and I'm going to vote that way. And we're gonna basically be, like, I think you used the word, I forget what it was. It's a kind of a bad word, so I don't want to use it on radio. But kind of stubborn, you know, kind of like a, you know, just bullheaded.
Forward more to your case. I tell you what, I even had, the supporters of Dr. Paul running again. Everybody, you know, we got to get the band back together. You know, Ernie, let's go.
Yeah.
I'm going, look, while you guys are talking about that, you know, it's going to happen. There's nothing that's
right.
going to happen that's going to stop the inevitability of just the economics of it. That's why we put our effort into the walletvoting.com thing and this Arabic versions of Freedom's Phoenix. And
it's you got to move ahead because the collapse is not waiting on any political party, even us, even, you know, liberty-minded people. It's not waiting for us to make political change. The change is happening right now. And you got to do what you're doing. You got to get ready for it on a personal and economic level. And on a political level, you got to understand what liberty means. And you got to understand, you know, this nanny state is not affordable. This empire is not affordable.
But I am interested in your running, making sure you get your voice out. Because whatever help we need. Oh, we're talking about, you know, we didn't get a chance to talk about it, but, you know, we're starting to do a digital e-zine version of Freedom's Phoenix that's much more philosophically in line with what we want, as opposed to just all the news coming from everywhere. We're going to dissect. And Karen's offered, she'll be part of this as much as time
allows. Yeah, can't wait.
And it's just because you can see from this interview, she's going to have something to say. And if she's going to be running for Congress and she wants to give them what fur? Oh, how much can I help? And now you know why. Share this interview with all your friends. They want it. Hey, thanks, Karen, for coming on. It's always great to get caught up with you.
Yeah, well, thank you. I always love talking to you, and this goes by really fast. It's a lot of fun. Love it.
Yeah, see, I told you we need 2 hours.
We do.
We'll see you tomorrow on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. We'll be right back tomorrow. Stay tuned. Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what readers of freedomsphoenix.com get every day. Readers of freedomsphoenix.com are constantly provided the information that detail the real news between the lines of propaganda about government policies and the true relationship we all have with coercive governments. Learn the true condition of our economy, innovations and technological breakthroughs in energy, health, computer science, and space travel. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media, the media that is so last century. Corporate media has evolved into nothing more than distributors of government propaganda, but we now have a fantastic alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com provides constant news updates on the issues that affect our lives in the most important ways. Our liberty and our property are under constant attack, and FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda while encouraging the participation of our readers. Join us at FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com, where the revolution between the ears has already matured. Toured.